The reading for today is a poem by Billy Collins, The Lanyard. The other day I was ricocheting slowly off the blue walls of this room, moving as if underwater from typewriter to piano, from bookshelf to an envelope lying on the floor, when I found myself in the L section of the dictionary, where my eyes fell upon the word lanyard. No cookie nibbled by a French novelist could send one into the past more suddenly, a past where I sat at a workbench at a camp by a deep Adirondack lake, learning how to braid long, thin plastic strips into a lanyard, a gift from my mother. I had never seen anyone use a lanyard or wear one, if that's what one did with them. But that did not keep me from crossing strand over strand again and again until I made a boxy red and white lanyard for my mother. She gave me life and milk from her breast, and I gave her a lanyard. She nursed me in many a sick room, lifted spoons of medicine to my lips, laid cold face cloths on my forehead, and then led me out into the airy light and taught me to walk and to swim. And I, in turn, presented her with a lanyard. Here are thousands of meals, she said, and here is clothing and a good education. And here is your lanyard, I replied, which I made with a little help from a counselor. Here is a breathing body and a beating heart, strong legs, bones, and teeth, and two clear eyes to read the world, she whispered. And here, I said, is a lanyard I made at camp. And here I wish to say to her now is a smaller gift, not the worn truth that you can never repay your mother, but the rueful admission that when she took the two-tone lanyard from my hand, I was as sure as a boy could be that this useless, worthless thing I wove out of boredom would be enough to make us even.
I spent a lot of time this last week in Denver meeting with a committee of Unitarian Universalist ministers I co-chair, and one of our committee members is 7 months pregnant, expecting her first child. One of us asked her, "Are you ready?" And the rest of us laughed, who had kids, because we know there is no way you can be ready. You have to have the experience of a baby's arrival to know just how much it upends your life. A couple weeks ago, I shared Marge Piercy's poem about the advent of great love. In that poem, she compares it to a train wreck, even that joyous event, because coaches are upended, people screaming, luggage strewn over the mountainside. The same goes with an arrival of a new baby. The baby's arrival will just upend everything. Everything. I mean, absolutely everything. And there's just no way you can be ready. But ready or not, when it's time, the baby will come. Let the wild rumpus begin. Let the dance between parent and child commence. Relationships between parents and children are immensely complicated, even when they are healthy for the most part. And it's with some hesitation that I take on the theme today, because each of us carries with us incredibly complex web of relationship with parents and children. If it was a dance we do with our parents and with our kids, it would be a wild, contorted, dizzying, improvisational dance. The lead would change over and over again. Now the parent's in the lead. Now the two-year-old's having a tantrum, and that two-year-old's in the lead. Now the parents wrestle the lead back. Now the kid's an adolescent, very much in the lead, perhaps. Now the child's a young adult and they're sharing the lead. Now the parent is old and sick and no longer able to be in the lead. I view the transitions in relationships between parents and children through the lens of my own experience, like any of us. I've had some challenging moments in that dance, but I'm really aware that I haven't had as many challenging moments by a mile as some folks. I have not had a child die. I've had my parents, one of them, die after a full, long, rich life. I haven't had to deal with abusive parents or a teen whose emotional cauldron boils over in violence. I know that sometimes the relationship with our parents or with our children can be so destructive that we have to put a great deal of distance in it to remain healthy. So I want to say my story is not universal, but it's where I have to start. And I'm going to share some of it today in the hopes that it gets you in touch with your own story. Now, I don't remember the first moves of this dance with my parents, being born an infant. So my memory picks up sort of mid-step in the dance when I was maybe 4 years old. I can remember that I pretty much idolized my parents, especially my dad. Well, the next thing I knew, it was time to go off to kindergarten. I was kind of looking forward to this, though I still liked being home and wasn't anxious to be away for big chunks of time. But as elementary school progressed and I got toward that end of the building where the big kids were, I found myself kind of happy not to be home as much. I found myself not as universally proud of my parents. And I found myself, get this, sometimes embarrassed that they were my parents. And then I found that I actually was quite a bit smarter than they were. Well, by the end of high school, well, I was an adolescent, but you knew that. By the end of high school, I would really hardly was home except to sleep. School, a job outside of school, and especially friends took the front seat. Family was a distant fourth at best. In those days in high school and into well into young adulthood, I honestly struggled a lot with my dad in particular. I had a lot of anger, a lot of wishing he was someone else, a lot of thinking that maybe I could change him. And I had to work through that and get to the point of understanding and acceptance. Well, I went off to college about 1,000 miles away, and my life pretty much shifted to where I was going to college. I stayed there for summers. I'd go home to visit 2-3 times a year, but truly the axis of my life had shifted to where I was in college. Now, there was one tie that I probably underestimated at the time, namely that my parents were mostly paying for college. I since have gained an appreciation for that. I began to figure out that piece of it when I was in graduate school, financially independent on my own. Then after graduate school came marriage, starting a career, and then the next transition, vastly complicated, this dance between parents and children I'd been doing, the birth of first one child and then a second. Now, I was simultaneously my parents' kid and my kid's parent. And seemingly in the blink of an eye, my kids began their journey toward independence. Off to preschool, off to kindergarten. Amy and I, my wife Amy and I, remember so vividly the first time our daughter came home singing a song that we had not taught her. A song that we had not heard of before. A little marker on that road to independence. And then before we knew it, our kids had transitioned into adolescence. Wait for it, yep. They were embarrassed of us sometimes. And they seemed to think they were quite a bit smarter than we were. And I looked up in the midst of my kids being in adolescence, and I noticed that my parents had become elderly, that they had crossed that imperceptible little dividing line between being young old and old old. Failing health, especially on my mom's part, necessitated my siblings and I to get more involved in their lives. So there was a move to a residence for seniors from a condo, trips in and out of rehab for my mom, more assistance in the apartment to try to make that work, my mom first and then my dad giving up their driver's license. And as all of this was happening, my kids were progressing in their road to independence. Our son got his license right about the same time my mom gave up hers. And all of a sudden, I found myself walking around college campuses, touring with our daughter. It seemed like just yesterday that I was doing that with my parents. And so our daughter went off to college in Chicago. Now she's studying this fall in Budapest. And then came a huge transition in the dance. One of my dance partners, my mom, died. 8 months after that, we took our youngest off to college just a few months ago, 1,000 miles away, of course. And as suddenly as that nest began to fill 20 years ago, it emptied. Well, this dance between parents and kids that I've been part of, it's not over. There's going to be lots of twists and turns and lurches ahead. But at this vantage point, I do have a few observations about the journey. One is the observation that I never really seem to be quite ready for the next transition. I never seem to be prepared, aware of it. I'm caught off guard. I had this realization lately when I was going through some books. Amy and I are doing some cleaning house, you know, sort of re-nesting, I think. And we were getting rid of some books, and I came across a book on raising adolescents. Unread. I tossed it in the box to go. Too late. And then I thought about all the books about welcoming a baby into the family that I hadn't read. All the books about hospice, end of life, that I hadn't read. Maybe the wisdom we gave our colleague was correct anyway. You really can't prepare. Another observation is that I seem generally resistant to whatever the next change is. Mostly I do that by way of denial. So I was slow to recognize my kids had actually moved into adolescence. I was slow to recognize that my parents had crossed over that line into the frailties of old, old age. I didn't want to see that. All of my mom's illnesses I saw as an anomaly. She's basically a healthy person, but episodically sick until finally there was no health between these episodes. Another observation is that this dance between parents and children is never going to be equal. Typically, one partner gives a lot and the other receives. For most of our lives, I think it's our parents in the giving role. We're more in the receiving role toward the end of life that can begin to shift. Here's the truth, though. This giving and this receiving, not likely to even out. Giving my mom a lanyard or caring for her in her dying days could never equal all the gifts that she gave me. Equal giving, equal receiving, it's not a realistic goal. Maybe it occurs to me, when I give to my kids, I'm giving back to my mom. Another observation was spurred by the congregational response a couple weeks ago after the sermon on transitions in our lives. And someone very insightfully shared that every transition he had gone through was in some senses isolating. And I think that's awfully true in our transitions in our relationships with our parents and our kids. Certainly it's true if a parent dies, or even more so if a kid dies. Having a baby can be isolating. The baby soaks up so much of our time. Of course, we have to draw back from other engagements. Same with a struggling adolescent. Having an adolescent who's struggling is isolating for a parent. Being a struggling adolescent is awfully isolating for the adolescent. The empty nest can be isolating for the child who goes away to begin somewhere anew, and for the parents left behind. So these are some observations I have, and they lead me to come to some very tentative suggestions about ways each of us might be able to get through this dance with our parents and with our kids if we have them in more graceful ways. My first tentative suggestion is to hold very lightly to the status quo, even if it's something we really like, because it's probably not going to last very long. Whatever's going on in our relationship with our parents and our kids likely is going to be fleeting. More than anything else, these relationships are defined by change. We change as individuals in them. Our parent or our children changes, and our relationship changes. So don't hang on too tightly to the way things are now. A corollary suggestion is to welcome the changes as much as is possible. Welcome that next move in this crazy dance, or at least welcome the wisdom, the opportunities that may unfold in it. Even the death of a loved one, as much as we wish it didn't happen, can yield some growth, some learning, some wisdom. Every new thing can open up new vistas, new perspectives in our life. A third suggestion is just to relax about this giving, receiving equation. Don't get too bent out of shape when it seems way out of whack. I did a sermon a long time ago called I Want to Burden My Loved Ones. And I really do want to burden my loved ones, not all the time, but at some point, maybe especially toward the end of my life, I may be an enormous burden for them. And I hope when I get to that point, I don't resist being a burden to them, because I think there's a gift in that, honestly. It's part of that parent-child dance. It's okay to be a burden sometimes. Fourth suggestion is not to try to get through these transitions perfectly, completely gracefully, because it's not going to happen. We're human. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to screw it up. When we're stressed, we especially make mistakes and screw things up. And these transition points are times of enormous stress. We magnify that stress when we're trying to be perfect. It's not going to happen. Fifth, okay, this is completely contradictory to what I've said earlier. It's that we actually should plan a little bit, even though we know things can change, but a little bit of planning can help. You know, as long as you hold to the plan lightly and can be flexible. So an example, planning ahead about when it's time to quit driving. Amy and I have actually already had that conversation with our kids. How do you know when it's time to quit driving? Well, we've told our kids, we will know when you tell us. Don't do that lightly, because that's a really, really big deal. But when you tell us it's time to quit driving, we'll quit driving. And we'll try to do so with as little resentment and second-guessing and guilt-tripping as possible. Sixth suggestion is to keep reaching out. Since isolation accompanies so many of these transitions, it's so important to try to reach out to family, friends, congregation, especially with the tough transitions, the addition of a new baby, dealing with a two-year-old's tantrums, dealing with a teen who's going through a tough time, dealing with a dying parent. Those are the times especially to reach out. And one final suggestion, and this one is maybe the most important if the relationship with a parent or with a child is a life-giving one, if it's not abusive, if it's not destructive. And that is to then look at what lies underneath all the changes, the twists, and the turns. And as I look back at the dance that I've done with my parents and my kids, I do see a strand running through all of it, from the moment of my creation to my mom's death to packing the kids off to college. And that strand is love. Peel away all the layers of changes, the emotional complexity, the anger, the self-differentiation, the embarrassment, and what is left is love for me. And none of these changes could ever destroy that love. Even my mom's death did not end the love I have for her or the love I feel from her, because it's in there. The tumult, the challenges, the pain, the anger, for me all those things come and go, but what abides is love. I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my baby you'll be, my mommy you'll be.